Hello, budding pilots, and welcome to Flight Time from AOPA and Flight Training Magazine, where we bring you the amazing people who make up the fun and exciting world of aviation. I'm Jennifer Nahn, Senior Manager of Media Relations and Public Affairs at AOPA. Almost all pilots dream of someday flying in Alaska. Aviation is a vital link to remote Alaskan communities, and the stunning mountains, rivers, glaciers, and wildlife make flying there a great adventure. Today, AOPA Associate Online Editor David Tulis catches up with Chris Palmer, an Alaskan instructor. Chris owns Angle of Attack, a school that uses the power of social media to show off the joys of learning to fly in the last great frontier. Flight Time is brought to you by AOPA. Go to AOPA.org for more information. And if you're not a member, make sure to click that join button while you're there. If you like the show, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. All right, David, take it away.
Chris Palmer, welcome. We've got you online today. I'm talking to you in Frederick, Maryland, and you are in Alaska. Tell me where you are today.
I'm in Homer, Alaska, South Central. Pretty amazing to be talking 4,000 miles away to each other in a matter of seconds.
That's right. Now, it's lunchtime over here, and it's, 9 o'clock your time?
Yeah, just got done at the morning routine with the kids and just stepped into work. So, yeah, it's like being in Europe, but the opposite direction. We're pretty far away.
Gotcha. Well, tell the podcast listeners a little bit about yourself. I know that you've been involved in podcasting for quite a while. You are an Alaska pilot. You're a flight instructor, and you've got a varied history of aviation. But let our podcast listeners know a little bit more about you.
Yeah. So I think my big thing is education. I really like the education side of aviation. So I've always been into that. I kind of started out early on in my life loving video and doing video and being kind of a tech geek as well. And those kind of came together for me with aviation to where I have a fairly popular Instagram. Angle of Attack is kind of my brand name, Angle of Attack, and also a YouTube channel. But at the end of the day, I really love flying and I enjoy teaching. And I love seeing people achieve their dreams in aviation. And so I'm big on not only doing that one-on-one with people, which there are, you know, tens of thousands of instructors out there doing it, but I love sharing that online to inspire people to keep going and keep moving forward and chase their dreams. So kind of a two-pronged effort with the online and just the live in-person instruction. And it just so happens that I get to do that with the backdrop of Alaska, which I'm very grateful for, and it's a beautiful type of flying. So yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
So Chris, I know that you are a big time educator, and I definitely found out that your passion is teaching folks how to fly and chatting about it too, and learning from others' trials and errors. But the podcast version of this, you were telling me that you've been into the media for quite a while. It goes back to 2013. That's a pretty far piece back, and here we are in 2019.
Right. And actually, my company itself is 13 years old. And so I started in 2006 doing some other aviation training efforts and I've done some other projects. But yeah, I started my podcast in 2013, 2014, kind of around Christmas time then, if I remember right. And did the podcast for a long time. I haven't released an episode in a while, but I have plans to kind of spool that back up. But, you know, I have a lot of these efforts that I'm just trying to do to reach people and help them in aviation. And, you know, I think we all consume our aviation content in a different way. I think a podcaster type is a different type of person. I find that they're very dedicated, the podcast listener. So, you know, I really enjoy podcasting itself. You know, that's where we are now, talking now.
Exactly.
I find that people that are in tune with podcasts, again, they're very dedicated. They get a lot out of this. They listen intently and deeply. And so I really enjoy sharing messages through just audio. I think it works really, really well.
And speaking of sharing messages, we talked at the beginning of the podcast that one of the reasons you are so popular is that you do have a lot of educational materials and you're all the time helping people fly and pass on some of that knowledge. Tell me a little bit about Aviator Training. That's one of the websites that I just tapped into just now. It has a little bit more about you and about you as a commercial pilot and your background. Tell us a little bit about Aviator Training.
Yeah, so aviator training is kind of the official, actual aviation training side, you know, flying an airplane, so flight training. So I do have a flight school here in Alaska. I have a 172. I'm currently the only instructor, and I offer private instrument, commercial. It's kind of odd because I realized a while ago that I can take someone, and this goes for many instructors, but I can take someone that doesn't know anything, and I'm at a position in my career now where I can take them from zero all the way to becoming a commercial pilot and guide them through that process with an instrument rating as well in there, because you know, you don't necessarily have to have an instrument to get your commercial. But that's just crazy to me that you can get to that point in your career where you can help someone like that. So that's what I do at Aviator Training. I also do online ground school, so that's wrapped in there as well. I know I said that this is more of the physical type of aviation training, but I also do online ground school. You can find that there as well. So far, I have private and instrument, plan on doing commercial and CFI in the future. What I'm really, again, going back to the very beginning, what I'm really passionate about is just sharing how to do this right and how to help people break through their barriers. Because what I find and what I went through myself is there were just a lot of things in my way that were kind of unnecessary. And so what I do in my ground schools and in my training is I try to talk people through that a little bit more, or explain it in a different way, or show it in a very easy to digest format, which is, you know, designed well on my website. So I focus on all those things with aviator training. I try to make it, you know, very grassroots and personal for people and enjoyable. The word edutainment comes to mind.
I like it.
Yeah. So that's kind of what aviator training is all about. But, you know, I actually admittedly got the URL aviatortraining.com pretty early, but I just recently got the URL angleofattack.com. So that's where I'm sending everything now, because Angle of Attack is my actual brand name.
And you have a very cool logo for that too.
Yeah, appreciate it.
No problem. And for folks who are trying to visualize this online, I can't imagine that that's a picture of you, Chris, but we have a pilot with some aviator goggles, a little scarf, a really nice looking jacket, I would say, and a tie, and with mountains in the background and a little bit of maybe either water or snow. Was that a glacier in the foreground?
Yeah, water. And I think there is snow on the glacier on the mountains too. So it is, actually is. I had that design and it's modeled after what my hometown looks like.
That's cool.
And actually says a city name on it where we're based.
All right. So angleofattack.com. And that's where you want people to go.
Yeah. And they'll go to the same place. So it doesn't really matter. It all goes to the same place. Yeah.
All right, tell us about Homer, Alaska. Describe that for folks like myself who haven't been to Homer.
Yeah, so Homer's a little bit different. A lot of people imagine Alaska as this ice-ridden territory and deep in the mountains, but we kind of have a mix here where we're right on the coastline. Homer is the halibut fishing capital of the world. Tourism is our number one industry, and a lot of that is surrounding the fishing. But we have world-class kayaking, hiking, and of course, we have an aviation component to that, where I would say the number one aviation tourism industry in Homer is bear viewing. And so we have a lot of operators here that fly out of Homer. They'll take you and land you on a beach and you'll go see coastal brown bears up close and personal, quite close sometimes, depending on what the bears decide to do. But that's our number one aviation industry. Now, I'm kind of in the middle of that where, you know, I'll do ratings and tours if people come in town. It's all surrounding flight instruction. So I mostly cater to the pilot crowd and just do instruction. But we have beautiful mountains here. We have glaciers in the mountains. We have something called the Harding Ice Field, which is the largest ice field that is self-contained within the United States. And it's just one big sheet of ice for about 80 miles. And it's beautiful and offers some flying challenges in and of itself. But it sure is a good backdrop, if nothing else.
Yeah, I was just looking at the Driftwood Inn that came up on a regular little Google search, and the scenery is spectacular. It's this ginormous bay.
Yep.
And it opens up into a whole scenery of a background of glacier-covered mountains, and they look pretty darn rugged. Now, tell me about flying in there in a 172. That's got to be a little trying at times.
Yeah, it really is. And just before I get to that, I think probably the best way for people to see where I am and how I fly is through my Instagram. I'm very active there.
Definitely hit us up with your Instagram account.
Yeah, so it's Angle of Attack. So Instagram.com/Angle of Attack. Or if you're just on Instagram, Angle of Attack. And if you scroll through there, you can see what that looks like from an aviation perspective, maybe have an airplane in the picture or something. So flying in the mountains here, you know, it is quite challenging. I have a lot of experience in the mountains. I ended up doing a lot of my early flying in the Rocky Mountains. I grew up in Utah. But here it's a little bit different because we have a lot of low weather. You know, we kind of laugh that if it's not low weather, like marginal VFR, then it's not Alaska VFR is what we call it.
Right. You're down in the lower 48 at that point.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, it's a little bit different with the weather being mixed in with the mountains. But, you know, I'm really careful. I know how to fly in the mountains. I have a 172 that is fairly underpowered. It's an older 172 with an 0300, which is only 145 horsepower. So I don't want to get into too many tricky situations in the mountains where I'm dealing with downdrafts.
Right.
But actually, we don't have to deal with the density altitude here because we have these mountains that just kind of jut up right out of the ocean. And so we're at sea level in these mountains, and you don't get a lot of mountain wave action that you'd usually get, say, in the Rockies, because our mountains aren't that deep. If you were to look at a map of Homer, you'll see that the mountains, the Kenai Mountains across the bay, are only about 10 miles deep.
Okay.
Yeah. So you don't get too much crazy movement, but I'm still really careful. And, you know, I do mountain flying courses. If people come into town, they've never flown in the mountains before. I've had a handful of Instagram followers come in and do that, where I just go up and I kind of give them a little course on what it's like flying the mountains, what to look out for, when to commit, how to fly up a canyon, those sorts of things. There's a handful of kind of high level things that you need to do when you're flying the mountains. So, you know, it's really not too bad. If anything, it's really distracting because it's beautiful. I find myself in the middle of a flight lesson saying, okay, hang on a second. We got to bring out the cameras and take a picture really quick to kind of remember something.
But, absolutely.
Yeah, it's really nice.
So speaking of that, I'm looking at your airplane on your Instagram account. Is that your airplane 3 uniform?
Yep, 2-3 uniform.
Man. I'm sorry, yeah, 2-3 uniform. So this is a 172 that's got some pretty honking tires on it. Just, I guess for the clearance, and there are a lot of gravel strips in Alaska. That's something that people in the lower 48 probably are not familiar with.
Yeah, it's funny. I had a friend visit a while ago. He's a A320 captain for a major airline, and he had never landed on gravel before. And so he had his first gravel landing with me. We have a handful of paved runways here, you know, larger airports. I think a lot of those were developed for military reasons because Alaska is historically a very strategic location for the military. And then for things like oil spills, unfortunately, have really bolstered up some of these airports to make them a little bit bigger. But other than that, everything is about a 2,000-foot gravel strip. That's the type of airports that you fly into. And not only that, you're usually flying into a strip that's surrounded by trees. And so it brings to bear the importance of airmanship, of flying well, stick and rudder flying skills, and really getting those short and soft field operations down pat.
That is a good point. I recently, just this past weekend, had the opportunity to do some East Coast mountain flying. I dropped my daughter, Lauren, off at Sugarbush Soaring Camp up in northern Vermont. And it was a mountain strip surrounded by mountains on each side, on both ends of the runway. And I've got to be honest with you, Chris, it is not something that I'm used to doing. I'm a flatlander here in Maryland, you know. So it was challenging for me, and I learned a lot about flying and a lot about not dragging it in, but using that high approach and dumping all the flaps at the last little bit. And I'm assuming that a lot of that kind of flying will transfer pretty easily over to what you guys are doing.
Oh, well, and the other way too, right? I mean, I tell people that if you learn to fly in Alaska or you're going to learn to fly in any mountains, you should be able to apply those skills wherever you go. Of course, you want to find the local knowledge that people have about those particular airports, maybe how the winds move around at that airport. But there's challenging flying everywhere. And so I absolutely believe that the flying that you did into Sugarbush was a challenge for you. And it'd be very equal to a challenge that you'd face here in Alaska. So yeah, those are new skills that, again, bring to bear your ability to handle the airplane at maybe slower speeds or higher descent angles, whatever it is you're dealing with for that airport, and make it happen. So that can happen anywhere. I was actually just in Arkansas right after AirVenture and had some amazing backcountry experiences there as well in the Ozarks. And so a lot of my skills that I have from Alaska, I brought to Arkansas and did okay there too.
You know what? That is something that's really interesting that you brought up, and you brought up a very good point, which is there is excellent flying around the states no matter where you're going to go. You just have to get out there and do it.
Oh, man. This is something you'll hear me say 1,000 times. People look to Alaska and they look to me and they'll even write me on Instagram and say, it's my dream to fly in Alaska. And I know where they're at, right? They're in California or they're in the Northeast or they're in Florida. And I almost want to grab out or reach out and shake them and be like, hey, there's stuff in your own backyard. You just need to look and you need to ask around because there's some amazing spots no matter where you go. And with the work I get to do with having kind of an online presence and getting these opportunities to fly in different parts of the country and actively reaching out and doing that stuff myself, I just find that no matter where I go, no matter what the state, you name it, it's been absolutely amazing. I've had a great, unique flying experience everywhere I've been. So look in your own backyard. Don't just look to the future about where you want to be, but be happy with where you're at now and find some neat experiences right now, because I bet you anything, there's a lot more right around you than you realize.
That is a key point, Chris. Look in your own backyard first and get to know it. And you brought up another super good point, which is get in touch with the local pilots and find out what the winds in that airport are going to do, or if there's a special way to enter the airport or exit or go through a certain valley. The local experience is invaluable. I totally agree with you.
And a really neat connector for that these days is actually Facebook. There are a lot of good, healthy Facebook groups. And so you can ask on these groups if people have flown in that airport and what they experienced, and you'll get a lot of practical knowledge that you're just not going to get through any other means. And this is what we call tribal knowledge, right? It's those things that are passed down to people. So we are leveraging technology, but we're also just reaching out to people who have actually flown in there and done that. And I do this all the time for airstrips in Alaska, because if anything, there's a major lack of information for airstrips here comparative to other locations. So it ends up working really, really well. And I would definitely encourage people to do that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about social media, and because you are a key social media influencer, and we were happy to make your acquaintance here today, but also you've been a key influencer at AOPA before. I know Ian Twombly has spoken with you as well. But tell me a little bit about how social media has affected what you're doing, or how it has brought more people into aviation.
You know, that's a really good question. Sometimes I wonder if social media is just a way for people to consume aviation and enjoy it and see cool videos. And, you know, who knows if they're looking at Instagram right before they go to bed, or if they're on a train commuting to work, whatever it is. But it really struck me as much deeper than that when I went to AirVenture this year. I was stopped a lot just walking around, and also had a number of meetups and things that I did that, you know, kind of put my face out there. And I found that actually the experiences that people were having with the media I was creating was deeply inspirational to them in getting them through times when they weren't flying, or they were trying to get into flying, trying to connect the dots, trying to find the passion for it. And that's what I'm really all about, is I'm just sharing my aviation life here in Alaska, in this small town. I have a family. I really enjoy what I'm doing. I don't plan on becoming an airline pilot. Not saying that's a bad career. The money seems really good. It's tempting. But I'm just sharing my corner of aviation and my passion for it. And I found that people were really getting inspired by that to keep going. And that's always my message, is work through your barriers, you know, just one little step at a time. Keep working through things and figure out how to make this work, and keep taking those little steps forward. And I think the good thing about social media is that if your mind is engaged in aviation, you're always learning something and you're always moving forward just a little bit. The community is very helpful. It's just helping everyone move forward toward these goals. And if you just envelop that as part of your life, then eventually your life will be in aviation, or it'll be deeper in aviation. It was interesting to me that it was much deeper than just throwing things out there and having it work, but that it actually meant something fairly deep to people in getting them inspired to keep moving forward.
Well, social media has made the world a smaller place for a lot of us. And you earlier in the conversation today, you mentioned that a lot of people have found you, actually got in touch with you because of your social media presence. Explain that a little bit to us.
Yeah, it's been definitely the number one marketing source for my business, not only the online courses that I have, but also the flight training here. So I'll have people that are very inspired by, you know, what I'm doing in Alaska and the type of flying I'm doing and say, hey, I'm going to be visiting Alaska. I'd like to fly with you. It's like, of course, you know, I'm open for business. Here are my rates. It's pretty simple that way. It brings up another point that sometimes from the outside looking in, aviation seems inaccessible to people, but really there are so many people out there like myself and so many of my colleagues that I know that want to offer those experiences and have the ability to offer those experiences. You just have to ask. And I would say that, you know, wherever you are, there's a little community to connect to, and it's easy to find out who they are through social media and then just going out there and doing it. So that's basically what it boils down to, is the people that see my stuff and they're willing to reach out and talk to me will find that I'm very receptive and would love to have them come fly with me. So it's pretty simple.
You seem like a pretty good guy. I'm sorry I missed you at AirVenture. I didn't get there until after you guys did the influencers panel at AOPA. But what was your key takeaway from that panel that you participated in? You guys were talking a little bit about safety. You're talking a little bit about the social media world. And it brought together quite a few folks who are known, you know, to a lot of people. I mean, what does this mean to aviation, basically?
At the end of the day, I think as influencers or people who have somehow gained a public persona, we're just people at the end of the day. And places like AirVenture, where we happen to cross paths with you, the people, it is a good place to talk. But I think at the end of the day, that's what that conversation ended up being about. We started off talking about aviation safety with filmmaking and bringing cameras in the cockpit and how that works and how to avoid certain pitfalls. But eventually it turned into the fact that each individual person was inspiring someone in aviation in their own way. And for whatever reason, each individual has a voice that connects with a certain type of people. So, you know, my voice is going to be different from Flight Chops or Jason Miller or Trent Palmer or Josh Flowers or Matt Guth Miller or JP. I think I mentioned everyone that was there. I think Kevin Quinn was maybe on that panel too. So a handful of people, right? But they're going to have their own inspirational message that connects with a certain audience. And at the end of the day, we're all just living our aviation lives. For whatever reason, the algorithms online like what we've done. And so that's become a little bit more public. But for me, the validation of having a large number of followers is nice. But at the end of the day, I can't get anywhere without having those personal experiences with people and seeing that people are actually getting something useful out of what I'm doing. And really, that's, I guess, the end goal of my content, is that I want people to be better off for having viewed what I've done, whether that's through education of some kind or being inspired in some way. So that's really what I'm trying to accomplish through mine, a bit more of a training twist, I guess, and also an inspirational twist, just to encourage people to go out there and do it, because it is possible. The barriers aren't as deep as you'd think. They definitely aren't external barriers. They're most often internal barriers for people that are just limiting themselves from achieving this dream. So that's really what I'm trying to achieve. And I think that everyone on that panel said something in a similar way, that their specific type of content was inspiring a type of audience.
So what it is doing is that we're raising the profile of aviators a little bit across the board. So I think that that's a good thing. I don't see how that would be a bad thing at all. It certainly looks like social media has brought a lot more people together and has increased the awareness within and without the pilot, within and outside of, rather, the pilot community. So it's bringing maybe more people into aviation, or at least making them aware of the options.
I would totally agree with that. And there are a lot of options, right? Aviation is a broad industry throughout the world. You know, I know this guy actually that I want on my podcast. You can steal him if you want. But
yeah, we will.
you should, because this is an amazing story. He rescues chimps in the Congo, and that's his flying job. He'll fly in his bush plane and the people that are helping the anti-poaching outfit will rescue these baby chimps. And he's literally flying in the airplane with a chimp on his lap and taking pictures and sharing it on Instagram. There are just so many amazing stories out there. And really, whatever you pick in aviation, you have a unique aviation story and a unique pathway. And so I do encourage people to share that. But it's a very healthy industry right now. Social media is helping the awareness of what a lifestyle is like in aviation. And I think people get a broad spectrum of maybe where they would fit, depending on who they follow and what they like.
Yeah, well, I totally agree with you. And you brought up a really interesting point about another kind of flying, which is relief work flying and in Africa, also in the States. Social media came together during a couple of hurricanes 2 years ago and also again last year. So this united pilots with non-pilots and also united volunteers with pilots. And so I think a lot more people were exposed to aviation just because of what we were already doing. It was just a little bit easier maybe to get the word out.
Right. And you see efforts like Angel Flight that are always going on, or Pilots in Paws. There are so many amazing outfits that are in the background offering amazing charity work. And again, at the end of the day, we're just people. We like to share our talents and things and offer that in a way that's very helpful. I've been involved with Pilots in Paws before. I haven't done anything with Angel Flight before, but there are just so many amazing outfits that certainly help. And again, we're just people. We're here. We want to help. And sometimes it may seem like these airplanes aren't there for personal use or something, like they're just someone's play toy. But yeah, we like to have a mission, and I would rather do something useful than just go get a $100 hamburger.
Oh yeah,
although the $100 hamburger isn't that bad. I'm not saying
it's pretty
that.
Fun. Yeah, it could be fun.
Yep.
Well, plus if you're throwing a little bit of lessons in there, a little bit of learning or challenging yourself on your you know routine or regular flights, I think that helps too. But talking about outreach and things like that, Operation Airdrop is what came to my mind when we were talking about relief work on this side. But I have also flown a Pilots in Paws mission, and it was one of the most rewarding things I have ever done with my private pilot certificate.
Yeah, I did it as well. Because of the geographical challenges here, cats were up for adoption here close to where I live in Kenai, but they couldn't give them away. They couldn't get rid of them because the market was kind of saturated here. In other words, I don't really know how to say it correctly, but they couldn't find placement for the cats. So I ended up flying them from Kenai all the way to Fairbanks, which is quite a long distance, especially geographically. And they absolutely needed those cats there. And it was a deep need. So you have this disparity between the two, and they were very grateful to have those cats there. And those situations are kind of open-ended for the animals, just in this particular instance, where it could just be someone that had adopted the animal and you're taking it to the new owner, or you could be transporting several. Just a lot of great uses of an airplane. And I think staying within the legal bounds, of course, we should all be looking at ways to use our airplanes more effectively and be those philanthropists for aviation that show just how useful this airplane, AKA time machine, can be. So that's, I think we should all be big on doing that.
Yeah, it's like being a good steward for the community and to bring joy and happiness to other people. And if you could share it with aviation, that seems like a win-win for everybody.
Of course, who doesn't like to fly?
Right, exactly. Well, even cats like to fly, we found out today.
Exactly.
All right, so let's we're going to wrap it up pretty soon. I know you're a busy guy, but tell me a little bit about Angle of Attack, Instrument Ground School, and some of the other schools that you have for folks that are able to study via your online educational materials. Like, how can they get involved and what should they expect?
Yeah, it's really easy to get involved, to go to angleofattack.com and look at what we offer there. I would say that my approach on this, and I know that there are so many others out there that do it, but my approach is connecting the dots much better than has been done in the past. What I found in going through my own training is that what can happen is a manual can be brought out. Someone that develops the course will go through either alphabetically or just in order what's in the manual and teach it that way. But I want people to go into their written test preparation, which is a requirement, with the caveat that they're going to apply this knowledge they're learning to the real world and to their flight training once they get to that, not just getting the written done to get the written done. So I've gone through the material and I've organized it in a way I feel builds much better toward that goal and also helps people so that these test questions they're asking in this written test actually apply to some sort of real world knowledge. And so I'll share videos of my flight training that I do with people, you know, live things that have happened with students, you know, whether that's crosswind landings or encounters with icing, things of that nature, and show how that works and really drive that point home. So there's a real element to all of that. And then slowing down for certain subjects and taking the time on those things that are just more difficult for people to understand. Because at the end of the day, this stuff isn't rocket science. A lot of it's common sense. It fits together really well. And so I'm just a conduit as a teacher to help people do that. And that's what my ground schools are all about. Accessible all the time, just as you'd imagine. So you can learn at your own pace. And yeah, that's what I do with a lot of, again, Alaska background and flying stories and things like that. So that's kind of my corner of the market.
So you're bringing some real live experience and a little bit of personal chat into this, and you're doing a building block approach in a real world scenario.
Right, exactly. Why wouldn't it be that way? A lot of aviation training has gone towards scenario-based training anyway. So I guess I try to bring a lot of that mentality into my training videos, but I also am simply creating training videos that I wish I had when I had gone through my training. So that's what I'm trying to produce at the end of the day.
Exactly. I can totally relate to that. As a student, when I first was getting involved in aviation, it seemed like a daunting task. And I did do, at that time, was video courses, and they worked well. It was good. There's still some phrases that I remember to this day, but I think that it could have been a little bit more fun, a little bit more edgy.
Right.
And I think today's audience demands more, to be quite honest with you. They demand a different type of approach, and the attention span for younger folks is a little bit different than it was for folks, you know, even 10, 20 years ago, to be honest with you.
Yep. And I think that's why my Instagram has done so well, is because people can get in. You have a max video length of 1 minute on Instagram. They get in, they get a quick tip or a thought with a photo. And that's kind of their injection for the day of aviation knowledge. So it's an odd gap to fill, because there is a lot of material to cover when you talk about taking on a new rating. I would say even more so for the instrument rating. There's a lot of material to cover. So how do you play to those, I guess, demographic psychology issues and also deliver the full breadth of knowledge that people really need? And if anything, it's just fun to figure that out. And I think at the end of the day, people are doing it. They're enjoying it and it's working. So yeah, it's an odd world we live in, but it's a fun one. It's moving fast. And it allows me to be creative. So I'm having a lot of fun doing it.
And it sounds like people are responding to you as well, especially via Instagram. It's Angle of Attack on Instagram. Also, your coursework is available at angleofattack.com or aviatortraining.com, which you're transitioning to Angle of Attack, as you told us.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you're busy, a busy, busy guy. You got a lot going on. Is there anything I haven't asked you, Chris, that you want to let our folks know? I mean, we covered a lot of different subjects today, many, many that are very passionate to you.
I would just say, if you're thinking about doing this aviation thing, then go for it. I would also say that if you've been set back, which is probably the more common thing if you're already listening to this podcast, if you've been set back in some sort of way and, you know, family has taken a front seat, which is a very noble effort. You know, I have a family, I get it. If you chose a different career or whatever it is, but you're looking to get into this, there are ways to do it. It takes one step at a time. There is a community here in the background, in the foreground, whatever you want to call it, that's here willing, able, and ready to help. And just go for it. You know, take those little steps and you can make this happen. I think at the end of the day, sometimes people just need permission to go for this dream. Because there are so many people out there that are saying no in one form or another. And there are many people that just need the permission to move forward and achieve this dream. So you have my permission, David. I think they probably have yours too. Go for it. And if there's any way that I can help you out in that process, please let me know. Feel free to reach out to me on Instagram and message me personally if you have a question, and I'd be happy to help you out.
Well, Chris Palmer, aviatortraining.com, transitioning to angleofattack.com, and on Instagram, you've got a YouTube channel. I mean, they can get you any kind of way on social media. We really appreciate your time today, Colin from Homer, Alaska, and thanks for the insight into your world, you know, Cessna 172, and helping bring the next generation of aviators on board.
I appreciate it. And thank you and AOPA for all that you guys do. I really appreciate all your efforts for aviation.
We're all in it together. Thanks again, Chris. I appreciate it.
Thank you.